97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Time to chat with one of our favorites, Brian Fisher. You can follow him on Twitter, at Brian D. Fisher. You can read his stuff on Athlon. And you can also follow him on Twitter, as we mentioned, on Twitter. And he joins us now on the Smart Ring guest line. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Brian.
Doing well. Good to be on with you guys again.
Always a pleasure. All right, so normally we start on the college ranks, but today let's talk NFL. John Gruden steps down. The emails leaked out where he said some just horrific things. But does it stop with Gruden, or is the NFL, do they have a problem on their hands with more of these emails starting to see the light of day?
Well, I think the entire saga, obviously, it focused on John Gruden, and that's the big name in this. But I think that the reason why these emails are even being public is obviously the concerning thing if you were, you know, the NFL, because it affects another franchise. You know, this is all the result of that inquiry into the Washington football team, and I think that's really where the focus is going to turn going forward. It's not now that Gruden has been dismissed, and that story can kind of be set aside a little bit over these next couple of weeks. I think everybody's going to, you know, kind of refocus in on that toxic workplace environment that was happening there in Washington, and ultimately that is going to be, I think, what is going to start to make the headlines going forward.
Well, see, that's what I was trying to figure out is, you know, why these emails, when they were in discovery with the Washington football team, why these emails with Gruden and not other emails?
Yeah, and I think if you go back to the actual investigation, the thing about that whole thing was the NFL got a verbal report, you know, initially from the law firm that was kind of looking into the matter. And, you know, a lot of that has been done for legal reasons, obviously. And I think for the most part, though, that they had been sitting on these emails for months now. And so there's been some good reporting into them. And I think there's going to ultimately be, you know, more coming out of this fallout, because it's not just John Gruden. You know, yes, he's the big name that's been caught up in all of this, but we all know that there are other people involved with similar views in the NFL. And I think that's ultimately what is going to be the biggest change coming out of this, is others are going to be, you know, coming out and kind of being exposed for some of their bad comments. And I think that's what a lot of folks around the league are concerned about.
Brian Fisher joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. How nervous would you be if you're Dan Snyder right now?
You know, a lot. You know, I think, you know, there was a moment where, you know, it looked like, you know, Washington, the franchise was certainly coming back towards some prominence after what happened last year. And just kind of the turnaround that they had sparked. But, you know, ultimately, he's been sitting out for a couple months now, and he was poised to return to his team soon. And now that's, I think, back up in the air. And I think that if you're Dan Snyder, that is kind of the concern, is that ultimately what used to be a kind of sweetheart deal in terms of, you know, getting off with this investigation, that ultimately might not be the case, as pressure is going to continue to mount, not only in the D.C. area, but I think elsewhere. And you got to keep in mind, too, that this is a franchise, this is an owner that has been pushing these last couple of years to get a new stadium deal done in Washington. There's been some progress made on that front, but I think this might put everything back to square one, because that's ultimately what the franchise really wants, is a new stadium in Washington, to not be playing at FedEx Field. And I think that's definitely in the balance now, that not just between this report, but ultimately what's going to happen, you know, going forward after this investigation.
I'll tell you what, though, there are things that make me wonder how untouchable NFL owners are. You know, we saw in the NBA Donald Sterling run out with a private conversation that was recorded and then released. And then in the NFL, what started as a sex trafficking investigation that led to the Robert Kraft film that never got released, but obviously the situation that he was caught in didn't lead to anything. The film got thrown out, and everybody kind of got quiet about it. They ended up winning another Super Bowl, and it was like, oh, well, he's just an owner that has needs. And it was crazy how that all got swept away. I just wonder how untouchable some of these owners are.
Well, it's good to have a couple of billion in the bank and be as powerful as these people are. And let's face it, you know, things like, you know, what's happened with this Washington investigation and how Dan Snyder, you know, essentially is going to kind of set a few months out, you know, from his ownership, and then kind of come back and be welcomed into the fold as was per the original agreement. You know, that is kind of, you know, the fact of life, you know, for some of these owners. And I think for real consequences, like we saw with Donald Sterling, there's going to have to be some league reckoning, not only from the other owners, really in terms of indicting some of their fellow peers, but really from the league office to kind of stand up and say, this is not okay. I don't think Roger Goodell has that same kind of power that Adam Silver did back in the Donald Sterling days. And I think that's kind of what ultimately is kind of at stake here, for the NFL. Are they going to kind of stand up and put their foot in the ground, when ownership crosses the line? So far, we have not seen that. And I'm going to be very curious once, Roger Goodell kind of looks at kind of the tail end of his legacy now as commissioner. Will he kind of change his stance and start to kind of put his foot down a little bit harder on some of the owners?
Did we see the Panthers ownership run out? I can't remember.
Yeah, Jerry Richardson. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely, kind of forced the hand. But I think obviously that was kind of a different circumstance because, Jerry Richardson certainly getting up there in age. And I think the family itself kind of wanted to move on from that franchise. But I don't doubt that there was some pressure applied from league circles over what happened. But you go back to that agreement that he had with David Tepper, part of the reason that that self went through was he was allowed to keep his statue out front of the stadium. And that was kind of a big deal to Jerry Richardson. I don't think those kind of type of deals are going to happen anytime soon going forward, just based on what we've seen, not only publicly, but from the league office and their standpoint in terms of blessing some of these arrangements.
Brian Fisher joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. If you had an MVP vote in the NFL, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, where are you going with your MVP vote?
Oh, it's going to be a tough one this year. Again, I think it is probably Kyler Murray just because Arizona has kind of come out and been so impressive with this undefeated start. And he's putting up big-time numbers. I mean, let's face it, everybody understands that the Bills, they had a AFC championship type of squad. I think the turnaround story that Josh Allen has had is kind of been well-documented. He's got a lot of people on his side. But, Kyler Murray coming out of nowhere a little bit to have just this kind of impact, really on the team and, leading the NFC West, potentially winning that, I think that's going to count a long ways for voters. Given how deep that division is, I think that might be the kind of the feather in the cap. As good as Buffalo has been, as good as Josh Allen has looked, I think the fact that voters like those kind of stories that kind of come out of nowhere, and I think this might be the case with Kyler Murray. He's obviously dazzling, putting up a ton of points. He's the fantasy quarterback you love to have on your roster, and I think that's going to be true, too, for MVP voters if he keeps this up.
After Lamar Jackson's Monday night performance, I feel like he's kind of potentially tipping off a run at a repeat.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's ahead of the pace in terms of some of the numbers than he was in his MVP year. And he's kind of doing it by himself. I mean, you look at some of the drops that Hollywood Brown has had. He has not had a truly reliable receiving core. The offensive line has been shuffled in and out. And let's face it, in terms of running backs, it's really just kind of him in the backfield there. And a couple of guys, they've been having to sign off the practice squad. So it's been very impressive. And again, winning in that division is also helpful. I think, playing the Browns, playing the Steelers, being on national TV as much as Lamar is going to be with a stretch run, I think is going to be helpful. And showing that he can have that next leap as a passer like we saw on Monday night, I think that can make all the world a difference in terms of at the end of the year when it might be close with guys like Josh Allen and others. Showing that big improvement, I think that can go a long ways in the minds of other voters.
Can the Chiefs make up ground in the AFC West, or is this the Chargers' division to lose?
It just might be the Chargers' division to lose. Because they've already gone in there to Arrowhead. It's a long season. Injuries can happen. But you look at the schedule. I mean, the Chiefs playing that really kind of the first place finisher slate. It's a difficult road. And now you kind of think about you throw in a couple of injuries, and obviously Clyde Edwards-Helaire being out for the next couple of weeks, that's a tough blow. And so when you're going through the game, this is to me looking like a wild card team at best in Kansas City. And let's face it, for the Chargers themselves, they're playing like a team that wants to kind of take this and grab the bull by its horns and go for it and win this division. I think Brandon Staley's done a terrific job. They've got an MVP candidate themselves in Justin Herbert, the way that he has been playing. And I think that is definitely the team to beat so far in the West. But it's going to be an up-and-down division. I think everybody saw a couple of weeks ago. The Raiders were playing well. They've kind of trailed off. The Broncos were playing well. They trailed off. But those are two teams that are still difficult out that both these squad sides got to play. And so it's going to be a tough sledding, you know, really in both the AFC and NFC West.
It's making the transition into college football. Obviously, we've got two big matchups here in the state of Utah, BYU-Baylor, and we'll start with Utah, Arizona State. I was looking at some stats this morning. Arizona State's defense held Stanford to 13 yards rushing the other weekend. And obviously, they do some fantastic things, but it seems like, Brian, they're the best team in the Pac-12 right now.
I think so, and I think they've evolved to that point. I mean, I really don't even think that they've put together, you know, four complete quarters, you know, at all this season. You know, I think that's kind of been holding them back. Certainly it was in the game against BYU. But, you know, to be honest, you know, Jaden Daniels, this is kind of what we expected out of this ASU squad, and it's going to be a fantastic game. This probably will, let's face it, decide the South. Yeah, it's still got a lot to determine in terms of the rest of the season, but it does feel like this might even be determining in terms of the Pac-12 itself. I think ASU coming along at the right moment, they've gotten veteran leadership to step up, you know, when they've needed and starting to round into form. And, you know, you kind of might look back at that BYU loss and being a little galvanizing for the team. And I think it shouldn't go unspoken either, that ASU team in particular, you know, they do kind of have that us against the world mentality. And I think that's going to help them as they get into tough games like this against Utah.
The BYU loss to Boise State obviously hurts BYU in their hopes of New Year's Six and maybe even potentially college football playoff. And now they get to go to Baylor. Has your opinion changed at all at BYU after that game against a Boise State team that's had their struggles this year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily a true, you know, opinion-altering, you know, loss, just because, you know, we knew this was a team that had been punching above their weight. You know, they've been winning some games ugly here and there, but, you know, just doing what they've done in terms of, you know, playing the opponents in front of them. And I think they're almost playing with house money. I mean, they just lost so much production from last season, playing a much tougher schedule. I don't think anybody even would have expected, you know, it's going to be 5-1 at this point. And having a real chance to kind of go into that Baylor game to make another statement, you know, nationally. So you're not only knocking off another Power 5 opponent, but, you know, really doing it to a team that also has looked, you know, quite improved this season. So I think the injuries and not really having the consistency on offense has played a part in terms of this role for BYU, but I think they're still well ahead of schedule in terms of 2021 and what they want to do, even though it's been kind of difficult for them. Taking that loss against Boise State, where really nothing kind of seemed to go right, especially with those turnovers that they were able to toss.
What are you seeing from Baylor that is making them a nationally ranked team right now?
You know, they just look tougher, you know, kind of in the line of scrimmage. And I think they've gotten a lot more improved play along their offensive and defensive lines. You know, Gary Bohannon, I think, obviously is where it kind of all starts, and that's where the attention goes because, you know, this is a quarterback, you saw flashes, you know, out of him the last couple of years, you know, coming in for a couple of plays here and there, a couple of series, you thought, you know, this guy, if he's given the proper, you know, development, he could turn into something special, and it's finally clicking. You've got to give credit to Jeff Grimes and that crew. You know, they've installed a new offense, and the Bears have really taken to it. And I think Dave Aranda, you know, really after kind of almost a year zero situation, he's been pushing all the right buttons in 2021, and you kind of wonder what if, you know, if they had been able to overcome that game against Oklahoma State, which might have been determining, you know, in terms of their future and in terms of the Big 12 pecking order. But, you know, this is a Baylor team that is certainly much improved after really a disastrous year. The coaching staff has done a terrific job getting everybody to kind of play on the same page. And Gary Bohannon, I think, really the key to that in terms of operating that offense.
Brian Fisher with us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, college football and NFL insider. How much, you know, Alabama runs the table. They're still probably in the playoffs. But how much fun was it just as a fan of this game to see what Texas A&M did over the weekend?
Oh, it was great. I mean, maybe one of the better days in college football history. You know, when you think about it, just the excitement of the games from start to finish. I mean, if you had told me after that Red River game, so that wouldn't have even been the most interesting or even best game in the state of Texas that day, I would have said you're crazy. You know, I mean, it was just kind of one of those days in college football. And, you know, just a terrific upset, I think, for the Aggies themselves. They've been building for this moment for so many years. I think they had kind of circled this date on the calendar. I think everything they had put into this game, it really kind of came to fruition. I mean, this is a program that had been building those depths, you know, the stacking recruiting class for recruiting class, making sure that they had all the coaching staff was on the same page, and, you know, keeping that continuity on the staff, really building towards this moment. And credit to Jimbo Fisher. I mean, he called a great game. You know, I think there had been some criticism, you know, rightfully so, about, you know, this offense not being quite explosive, you know, kind of holding things back, you know, playing a little bit lower tempo. And, you know, Jimbo kind of changed things up and just called some great plays. And it made all the difference there. We knew the Aggies defense was for real. And they clamped down on that Alabama team. And I think really kind of sent some shockwaves through the sport, because now that one team has done it and now that Jimbo has done it, I think you're going to start to see a lot more confidence building up from others.
Well, you've got some real solid group of five teams that are in the top 25 right now. Cincinnati, that's 5-0. You've got Coastal Carolina at 6-0. SMU at 6-0. San Diego State, Mountain West Conference team, checking in at 5-0 at number 24. Obviously, SMU and Cincinnati, one of them is going to suffer a loss because they play each other here in a couple weeks. But you realistically could have Cincinnati, Coastal Carolina, and San Diego State all undefeated in their conference. What do you do with those three teams, those three conferences, and those three potential undefeated teams?
Well, it's obviously a long year, and it's still very difficult to go undefeated in college football nowadays, as we've seen. But I think Cincinnati, if they win out, you know, they've got as good a case as any to make the playoffs. For the others, I think you're talking about you know, cracking that top 12, and you know, they're a team like Coastal. You know, I think having done it already last year, you know, they're going to benefit not only from perception, not only from having, you know, one of the most efficient quarterbacks in college football in Grayson McCall, a fancy offense that everybody enjoys watching, but you know, I think that's also a team that it's going to rack up some solid wins. You know, they've got App State on the schedule. You know, they've got Louisiana down the road possibly. You know, this is a program that I think is certainly gunning for possibly cracking that threshold to where they can get into the New Year Six, even if there's another Group of Five team. And I think that's kind of the ultimate ceiling for a team like Coastal. Everybody else, you know, kind of playing for keeps after that. But this is kind of devolving a little bit in towards of having two really, really good Group of Five teams this year. One might get a shot at the playoff. The other might, you know, kind of sneak into the New Year Six. But it's going to be fascinating to kind of see play out, because I tell you what, as chaotic as this season has become, you know, these two have really put it on paper and on the field that they're pretty good football teams. And I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
Brian Fisher right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Who are your, I mean, off the top of your head, and I hate putting you on the spot like this, but if you could rank your top four teams in college football right now, who would they be?
Well, Georgia and Iowa are kind of, you know, 1-2 and the easy answers, right? But it's kind of after that you kind of scratch your head. I'm leaning towards Ohio State kind of being even number two ahead of Iowa, just because they suffered that loss against Oregon, but you know, the defense has played a lot better since they made the play calling change on that side of the ball, and the offense has always been good. They've always had, you know, skill position talent for days, and it's really starting to click in a way I think we all kind of expected. You know, with C.J. Stroud, with all those terrific wide receivers, with you know, really everybody kind of involved, and in terms of the overall talent level, I'm not putting it past Ohio State to, you know, make a run at the national title, given everything that we've kind of seen take place in college football. So those would kind of be my 1, 2, 3. I guess I would maybe throw in Oklahoma, although the, you know, just the up in the air nature, I think, at the quarterback position is leading me a little bit of hesitancy. And I think Alabama's right there as well, just because, you know, we know what we're getting out of the Tide, you know, kind of week in, week out. And while they've had these two close calls, you know, first against Florida and now against A&M, I think this is still a very, very good football team when you look at the players on the field and how they're capable of executing under Nick Saban.
Well, the AP poll has Cincinnati at number three. So you do have to ask yourself, how would Cincinnati do against Georgia, Iowa, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Alabama, Penn State, some of those big hitter teams? How do you think Cincinnati would fare in some of those big games?
Well, Well, we've kind of seen proof in the pudding with last year's Peach Bowl. We know there's a very good defense, and I think the question in my mind is can they kind of hit that extra gear that they had offensively with Desmond Ridder like they did last year? I think really the second half of last year, a switch kind of got flipped. I think go back to that SMU game, and they were starting to roll. Really starting to click offensively, putting up a lot more points. To complement that great defense, and that's what they're going to need if they're going to play an Iowa, a Georgia, someone like that. I think we all know that points are going to be at a premium when you're playing those teams. But if you can get something and really focus in on scoring enough points, I think all those teams are beatable. As good as Georgia has looked, there's still questions about their offense and how explosive they can be, with either quarterback in there. And so I think that. To me, this is as wide open a field in college football as I've seen in really the last decade plus.
Brian, we appreciate your time. Great insight as always. Enjoy another weekend of football and look forward to catching up again next week.
All right, sounds good.
Brian Fisher, you read him on Athlon Sports. You hear him right here on the Zone Sports Network. You follow him on Twitter @BrianDFisher.